Hi everyone, it's Gavin G, the best thing since lights, and you're listening to The Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week I speak to Kirsty Louise Garbutt, aka Mrs. Christmas, about her children's books. Welcome to the show, Mrs. Christmas. Christmas, how are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. It's been a bit of a long week, but you know the run-up to Christmas is always busy with stuff, isn't it?
Sure is, absolutely mental, isn't it? Crazy.
Gosh. How's your week been?
It's been manic, as you can imagine. It is kind of like the last full week for shopping and visiting schools and everything else and getting all of the books out ready for the little ones to have them for Christmas Eve. You know, that special night when all the magic happens. So we make sure that they have all of their books. So I am literally on it. So as soon as an order comes in, we're flying it out straight away. So it's been crazy, but it's been wonderful.
That's good. That's good. Tell us a bit about you and, like, you know, what you were doing time ago and how you got to where you are today. I think our listeners would like to know a bit more about that.
Yeah. So it's being a children's author really only really happened from November 2021. That's when the first book was published, Santa's Lost Buttons. And that came off as many things changed and many people's views changed when the pandemic hit. And I got made redundant from my job that I'd been in for 21 years as an EA, working for the ports industry for the UK. That came to an end. And it was always kind of like, up until that point, getting into writing for children was something of a when I have time. We all do it. I really want to do this, but it's just not the right time. This has happened. That's happened. Oh, I've had another child. Oh, now I have to see my child through university. It's maybe not a good time to give a job. It's maybe not a good time to come out of employment to try your hand at writing. But I loved it. Absolutely loved writing. Always written. So from being made redundant in 2021 and launching the first book, which had been with me for decades, it became the right time. The pandemic has got a lot to answer for. A lot of bad, but some good. So it kind of gave me the opportunity and the time to finally get the book onto paper, find an illustrator, and away we went. And it kind of just went crazy from there on in. And here I am now, having launched the third book this year, with another one to follow to keep in with the series.
Gone crazy.
I've been really, really busy, and next year is looking to be even busier. So yeah, so that's how it all started, really. It was, you know, it was by chance of the pandemic. I mean, how many people can say they had a pandemic in their lifetime? We certainly can, and that's when my life changed at the grand old age of 46. You know, it was like, right, that's it. Okay, so here's the opportunity, and I just seized it. I grasped it and made the most of a really bad situation, which just turned out pretty good.
That's brilliant. I spoke to a lot of people how during the pandemic something happened, or they discovered another skill or learned another skill, and they went on to do different things. It's interesting to hear that. And I've spoken to a few people that write books that I've interviewed as well. And it can be a bit of a long process, is that right?
It really can, yeah, especially children's books as well. I mean, writing a novel, I mean, you've got to have stamina for a novel. My children's books are around 720 words maximum. And I find that exhausting. So when you look at those who are writing 120,000 words for a novel, it's like, oh my gosh, that takes some stamina. But for children, you've got to be so careful. It's really tricky using the right language, the right words for the right age range. And then you've got to, you know, associate the pictures with the words so the children can learn, you know, I write in rhyme as well. So that takes a lot of doing. And this is where good editors come in and give you a helping hand with that. But writing a book, the process of writing a book and having it illustrated and then published, it's a good, from the kind of the first word for it to be published, you got to give it a year. Really, for it to be anything like what you need it to be. People can do it quicker. I've taken my time. Santa's Lost Buttons was written many moons ago. When I was a child, I met Santa, And the story goes as it, so Santa's Lost Buttons is actually based on a true story and has developed over decades. So it was my experience of meeting Santa when I was five, and watching his jolly round belly bulging with his jacket and his buttons heaving in their little holes, their little button holes. And me just thinking, if a button pops off, I've got something to show my big brothers in the morning to say, I have actually met Santa. And it never did. The button never popped off for me back in 1979. Oh. So, you know, I still had the memory and still the proof of my story, but obviously it was met with raised eyebrows of older siblings, as they do. And I believed from then on in, and I'm a still believer today. And it kind of developed over the years, over the decades. So my story was told to my mum, and it developed again when I was in my teens and developed again when I was in my 20s. And it was always that I'm going to publish this one day. Definitely will publish this one day. Oh, it's not quite the right time, though. Until, like we've covered, it did become the right time. But by then, it had transformed from what it was in 1979 to this incoherent scribble on a page that I could read and only I could read, but I could tell the story. Up until me sending it to the editor in 2021, and we just developed it a little bit and changed it a little bit, and made more stories from the original story, because the original story of Santa's Lost Buttons was around 1,200 words long, which was classed as way too long for the age range I was looking at, which is your 3 to 7, so 3 to 6, 3 to 7. And so we stripped it back just ever so slightly, and it had kind of like two stories merged into one, which, you know, Santa's Lost Buttons was the first one we published. And from the back of that, with the rest of the words that we stripped back, we created the Elf BI.
Okay.
Because the elf in Santa's Lost Buttons was part of the Elf BI, but we felt like Santa's Lost Buttons needed to be a pilot. So it's like your pilot book with all of the magic that comes with it. Some of the magic we do not broadcast, we do not speak about, because it's just like Santa, it's a mystery. When you do buy the books, you discover the magic. And that is all for the children to find on Christmas morning when Santa has been. And the parents play a major part in it. So it's all of the thought process that goes into these books. And when we launched Santa's Lost Buttons, I knew there were at least another three to come, which would follow on to it and create the series, which, you know, will come to an end of Christmas 2025. So it does, it's a long process. You know, it's from, I would say, from Christmas 2020, when I knew I was going to be made redundant in January 2021. And it's from there, and it will take us right the way to Christmas 25, when the book is finished. If it could be one big book, then you could say it's taken 4 years to write, you know, by the time you get the last one. So, yeah. And the illustrations to go with it, and my illustrators are amazing, phenomenal. I love every single one of them, and they've helped me get to where I am today. So,
which is brilliant. What are your goals and aspirations as a children's author?
Oh my gosh! So most definitely, I would say my aspiration, my goal would be that when somebody else is asked us a question about books when they were growing up, you know, what was your favorite book when you were growing up? What was that book that captured your imagination? What was that book that helped you to fall in love with reading? I would absolutely love it for one day somebody to say, oh, well, when I was five, I read Santa's Lost Buttons, and it stayed with me, and I read it all the way through my childhood. I've still got it today, and I read it to my children. It's by Kirsty Louise Garbutt, and it's amazing. We love it, and it comes with all of this magic and this special piece of magic as well, which I loved as a child, my children love today. That to me would be, I'd become a classic, you know, and I think every children's author would love to say one day, yes, if I become a classic, like The Night Before Christmas, you know, that type of story where you would just, everybody knows it, everybody's heard of it. And at one point you have read it, you know, whether you read it as a child or a teen or an adult. So yeah, I think it'd just be that. It would, my aspiration, my goal would be for my name to be on the lips of the child of today, who would be the adult tomorrow, saying, I grew up with Kirsty Louise Garbutt and Santa's Lost Buttons. That would just be amazing.
Yeah, so that would be amazing. Absolutely, totally. I mean, you did mention a bit about the 70s. How was your childhood? I mean, you mentioned a few things. What was it, 70s and 80s, like? What did it look like Christmas time and growing
Oh
up at
my
that time?
gosh. I loved it. Do you know, we were talking about this today in the office. This is crazy. We literally were talking about our childhood, and for a good hour, we do work, honestly, we really do. But you know, we do stop and do down tools, and then we just get nostalgic. And we were talking about our childhood, and my childhood was quite mischievous. I was a mischievous child. I was good, but I was very adventurous. You know, and today it's a lot different today to what it was when I was a child in the 70s and 80s, because we played out. We literally played out. We went on adventures. You know, we did things today that you would yesterday that you wouldn't be able to do today with the children. You know, we played out till the street lights came on, and we would create adventures in marketplaces. You know, I grew up in a small town where there was a marketplace where there were little huts where the stalls would be, but during the week they would be empty, and they would be filled on the weekends when the market would come. And we would create all sorts of adventures in there. And that's where, you know, I think maybe it's slightly lacking today. My imagination and my adventures as a child really did bring on the creative side of writing and being able to put a story together and imagine things, you know, away from a games console, you know, a playing on the TV, because there's a game on that. You can have a game on a TV now. You can have a game on a handset of some sort. There's a gadgets and gizmos all over the place. Whereas when we was kids, there wasn't all of that. You know, we were lucky to have an Atari where we played Space Invaders and, you know, I remember all of that. And when you look at the games of today and what it was 30, 40 years ago, it's totally different. But we weren't glued to an Atari. You know, we would play an Atari for an hour and get bored of it as kids in my generation, because we wanted to be outside. You know, we wanted to have adventures and go bramble picking and things like this. You know, we were talking about all this today, and you know, we did some naughty things as kids. We really, really did. Whereas today you couldn't do, you certainly couldn't do it today. And I'm not going to say on broadcast what we did as kids, but we got up to all sorts of mischief. We really, really did. But I could write now a little adventure story just based on my childhood. And it would be fascinating, because it literally cannot happen today, but it did happen then, you know, and it's all changed. So for me, you know, childhood of the 70s and the 80s, we were blessed. We were truly blessed. We really were. The poor children today just cannot have that childhood, which is so sad. But yeah, I am pleased to say I was a child of the 70s and 80s and had the adventures of a lifetime. I really did. It was fascinating. Off air, I'll tell you the mischief, but we
Yeah.
want to give the children any ideas.
Talk to us about your first book that you did a bit more in detail about, the characters and that kind of thing, and what inspired you to do that one.
Yeah, so that literally was the inspiration from. I was 5 years old in 1979. I'm a Christmas baby, so I was born December the 1st,
Oh, gosh, brilliant.
1974.
Okay.
And then 1975, it was the Christmas off, and I was fascinated by Christmas for as long as I can remember. My first Christmas memory is being five and meeting Santa Claus. The real Santa Claus was in my house, and I was just behind the door looking in and just couldn't move, couldn't speak. I was just like, he's here. He's really here, and I'm seeing him. Not everybody gets to see him, but I'm seeing him. This is amazing. And he was eating the treats that we'd left out, stuffing his face with a mince pie, hurrah. So I was dead pleased that I liked my mince pies. And I just thought, you know, his tummy's really growing. How many mince pies does this guy eat in one night? You know, and to see that his jacket, his iconic red velvet coat was bulging. And it was his buttons just like kind of holding in there. If they could scream, they would be screaming, please help, you know. And I really wanted one. I really, really did want one. And I always remember that. And I remembered that growing up all the way through my life. And like I say, I wrote the story. I developed it. Didn't have an elf in it in the beginning. Obviously, there was no elf there when I met Santa. It was just Santa. And I introduced the elf later on in the stories, as you do when you tell a story over and over and over again. It gets added to and added to and added to and added to. And there's no difference to mine. you know, but I always claim, and I love the claim, that Santa's Lost Buttons is based on a true story, because it's my true story, you know. And to write it was magical. It really was. And it was all about, I didn't actually get that button because Santa's button didn't pop in my house, but it didn't make him any less real. And as I grew older and wanted to write the story and let children read my story of when I was five, and they're going through it now at 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, wanting to meet Santa, will they meet Santa? And I just thought, what if they do find a button? What if they are that lucky child that Santa eats that one too many cookie, that one too many mince pie, or grandma's sleeping by the fire and he trips up over her and his button pops, or the cat chases after him and bites his bottom, or the dogs chase him out of the house because he's an intruder and his buttons pop all over the place, and he has to leave a button behind. The children would find a button, and they would be able to claim, Santa has really been to my house. Look, he's eaten the mince pie. There is a button off his jacket. And I know it's the button off Santa's jacket because the same button is in the story that I've read. Look, look, it's the same button. And that was what I would want. That was what I wanted more than anything. And for me to be able to create that and make it real for thousands and thousands of children now to be reading my story and experiencing the magic should Santa visit them, and a button pop off his jacket by chance, they will experience what I experienced, but with an added bit of extra magic. And that was what it was all about for me. And when I tour the schools today and I have a magic Santa button with me, let me tell you, I do, because I kept it. And I show them the button. This is what it looks like in real life. They are in awe. They are literally in awe of this little 1.5-inch button with 4 holes in the center. And on the top, it says Santa's button. Underneath, there's no message. If you're a non-believer, you can't see it. If you're a believer, you see the message. And this is the magic that we have when I read the stories as well. We get one of the teachers or the moms and dads to hold the button for me after the children have looked at it and confirmed, yes, it is Santa's button because it says so on the top. And when one of them says, well, I can't see the magic message on the bottom, means there's a non-believer in the room or nearby. And we revisit the button after the story has been read and the parent gives me the button back and I show the button to the children again. And by Jove, every single person in the room can see the secret message from Santa.
We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thank you so much for the insight into a bit of like the 70s and 80s and Christmas and about your book and everything. It sounds absolutely brilliant. I mean, your first book was published in November 2021, as we mentioned. And, you know, since then you've written, is it three other books? So four in total, is that right?
So there's Santa's Lost Buttons out now. There is the Elf BI and the Search for Santa's Sleigh. That came out last year, 2023, and we've released this year the Elf BI and Santa's Stowaway. Brilliant. And then next year there will be the final. So that will be four books in total, four pieces of magic to go with it and the element of surprise, and it will cover those believe years. So we cover the believe years of 3 to 6/7 because it's getting younger. Please don't get me started on that because it makes me sad. it's so that they can read and then reread the books over those believe years. But every year they will have a new book from the age of 3 to 6/7, read the new story, and hopefully Santa keeps visiting them if they're very good. And if he eats that mince pie, that cookie too much, or trips over the dog or the cat, he may just lose a button every year, and then you've got a collection. Mm. Oh my gosh.
Gosh. Why did you publish when you did and not, for example, maybe like 30 years ago?
Yeah, so it was all about timing. It really, really was the timing and having the nerve, having the bravery. It was that, am I really that good? Is this story as good as I think this story is? I think it's brilliant, but everybody else might not. I might just be... I might be biased to my own skills, my own craft of being able to write stories for children. So there was always that excuse. And I will say, now looking back, you know, you've got four decades in there where it's like there was always something stopping me, but was that something stopping me? You know, was it my own fear? Was it my own insecurities? Was it my, you know, that I just didn't have enough self-belief that I was good enough, the story was good enough. Could I actually really write this book and have it published? I mean, it was a dream. And you kind of go, I'm just me. Should I really be following this dream? And I kept putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And I actually, in 2015, it became so close because I developed a part of the book, shall we say. I developed it and marketed it, and it just went down a storm, and it sold in its thousands without going into too much detail. And everybody kept saying, "This, why don't you write the story to this? Why don't you publish the story that goes with this piece of magic? Everybody would love it." And, you know, I sent an A4 piece of paper with this little piece of magic that I developed, and it just briefly explained, you know, what the magic was about. And people were saying, this is a story in itself. And I was like, I have written it. I just haven't published it. I'm not quite sure I should. And then it was, if you publish this and then it gets marketed to a point where it loses the magic, there was also that fear. I didn't want the magic to be destroyed or blown apart or the children find out certain elements. And it was like, oh my gosh, how do you do this? You know, so there was always something stopping me, something in the way, until the universe kind of like collided with the pandemic and went, well, there you go. It's now or never, you know? And so 2020 was when I literally went, ping, light bulb moment. I know that next year is going to happen. You can now afford to take a year out and let's have a look and see what happens here. And that's when it all started. That's when it all kicked off, finding an editor, finding the illustrators, mm-hmm. you know, and it happened when it was supposed to happen. And I think releasing it in the year of the pandemic, when the pandemic was at its highest, when nobody could go out, the joy had been sucked out of everything, you know, it was released at the right moment. It mm-hmm. just hit everybody in the heart. And everybody wanted it for their child. They couldn't go out and go visit Santa. They couldn't go out and go see the reindeers down in the park, you know, and all of that magic of Christmas had gone. And then here's this book, which was giving them it back in the best way that we could by keeping safe, you know. And so it just went crazy. And it was the right time. It was the universe going, it is now. it has got to be now. I'm so glad I did, you know?
Absolutely. Are there any more children's stories you're planning for the future?
Yes, so there's obviously the last one of the LFBI. That one will come out roughly about September 2025. Before that, hopefully, fingers crossed, one that we have been writing and illustrating since 2022, believe it or not, and that is called The Hullabazoodle. And that is not a Christmas book. It is a mid-year book or an all-round year book set in 1872, and it's a magical zoo that is run by the Doodlebug as the zookeeper, who's a little bit disgruntled, shall we say. He gets all of these wonderful creatures into his zoo just by the sound of them. So he brings in a tiger moth. He brings in a rhino beetle. He brings in his pet fish, which is a dog, pet dog, which is a dogfish. And there's all sorts of other creatures that had these double animal names. And he was expecting to see, you know, these creatures just represent their names. And they didn't. A dogfish, it was a fish. And he was like, oh. And then he brought in a rhino beetle and was expecting to see a rhino and a beetle merged into this magical creature. And it was a beetle. And he was like, oh. And the same with a tiger moth. He wanted to see a tiger and a moth, you know. Oh, and it was just nothing. And because the Doodlebug was just like, well, you know, me and my magic pencil cane here, I can draw. So he would draw these creatures how he wanted them to be, how he thought they should be. That would wow his visitors to the zoo. And he created five or six of these creatures to live in his zoo that looked exactly like they said. You know, so the tiger moth was a tiger moth. The rhino beetle is a rhino beetle. You know, the gopher snake is a gopher snake. Mm-hmm. And there's all of these magical creatures in, but there's also a wolf spider. Oh, and he underestimated the wolf spider by recreating a wolf spider that looked like a wolf and a spider, but forgot about a full moon. So, you know, things happen under a full moon, you know, and then the zoo just goes crazy and all the creatures escape. And it's up to the reader to find out where they need to live, where they need to go back to in the zoo before the visitors arrive at midnight, you know. And it's all set in London of 1872. So the visuals are just incredible. What Munir Marcello has done with the illustrations for the book, we have taken into account the year, the decade that it's in, and made sure that everything is in keeping with the year 1872. So, you know, even the attire that the Doodlebug wears is very in keeping with the attire of 1872. And the posters that you see all around the zoo and things like this, you know, all explaining a cup of tea and slice of cake for 1D and things like this. So it's all visually absolutely stunning. And the story itself is so exciting because it's very interactive. The children have to, you know, guess which creature is lurking in the shadows. Is it the wolf spider? Is it safe to approach? And it's just superb. So that's coming out in hopefully April. So we've got two releases next year, which is going to be crazy.
Oh.
Absolutely crazy. So hopefully we can finish the illustrations on that and get that one out. And 2026, we'll see another mid-year as well, or all year round book. So there's three in the offering in the next 2 years.
Oh, okay.
So it's just crazy at the minute.
Sounds it. I mean, running your own business, writing, publishing your stories and touring, promoting, must be tough on the family.
Yes, it is. I've made so many sacrifices. I became a grandma to baby Jude last year in February. So he will be two this February coming. And I see him as much as I possibly can, but it is so difficult to try and get everything in and try, you know, keep up with your family and your friends so that you're just not completely isolated, you know, working full time and the books and the illustrators and, you know, speaking to them and the printers and everything else. It is tiring, and it is, you do have to sacrifice a lot to be able to achieve what you need to achieve, you know. Holidays, I haven't had a holiday since 2019.
Oh gosh, right.
I know.
So you need to have sacrifice.
I know. So when I talk about sacrifices, I talk about real sacrifices. It is literally whenever I get any time off, it's swamped with something else. It's swamped with, you know, finding supplies, you know, distributors and centres and things like this, it's constant. And luckily, I just had my 50th birthday on the 1st of December just gone. My darling children and daughter-in-law and grandson bought me a trip to Rome. So I am going to Rome in January, and it will be my first holiday.
Brilliant.
Since 2019. I've been out of the country on business, but never on pleasure, not since 2019.
Oh, no worries.
I know.
If, other than children's books, if you could write another genre, what would it be?
Oh my gosh, thriller. So as a child, this always raises eyebrows, because as a children's author, you imagine that I would say something fluffy like romance, and, you know, something not scary, but anything, thriller, mystery, crime, murder, suspense, you know, all of these things. And I think that kind of shines through a little bit with the FBI, because they're kind of like children's mini thrillers. So when you read the FBIs, they're always a little bit of mystery and a little bit of intrigue and, you know, whodunit and things like that. And it does shine through in the FBI. But if I was to write adult books, I would love to be able to write a novel. It would definitely be thriller, mystery, suspense, crime thriller. Love that genre. It's so exciting. Yeah. That's what I read. I read that.
I was just actually going to ask that.
I read by the bucketfuls of that. I do love it. I love anything like Lisa Jewell and Patterson, James Patterson, anything that is a guessing. So it's not so, like I find with romance, this is just my opinion, of course, and my like, with romance, I kind of guess what the ending's going to be. So I love to read a book where I just have no idea where this is going, you know, no idea who's the culprit, who's the protagonist of sort. Are they the one that's done it? Are they the one that's murdered so and so or stolen from so and so? Or, you know, I love that kind of thing. It has to keep me second guessing to keep me intrigued.
Oh, brilliant stuff! Where do you find the inspiration for the characters in your books?
It is all around me, obviously. Like Santa, we all know Santa, anybody can write about Santa, he's just amazing. But whereas it came with Belle and the Button, that was all by experience, and a lot of my stories come from something I'll see or I'll hear, or a child like the Hullabazoodle, that was written in 20 as I launched Santa's Lost Buttons in 2021. I'd already half written the Hullabazoodle, because that was just by, I'm working away and I had the TV on in the background. There was a nature program on, and I heard the narrator talking about a kangaroo rat. And I looked up really, really quickly to see this kangaroo rat, expecting to see a rat the size of a kangaroo, you know, jumping around on the TV. And I was just so disappointed. It was a mouse with big back legs. And I was like, Oh, that's disappointed me. So that's where the story of the Hullabazoodle came from, because then I started looking to see if there were any other creatures that had a double animal name. And that's when I came and saw that, there were lots of them. And the ones that stood out to me are the ones that in my mind I knew I could recreate into an illustration. You know, so that was literally a light bulb moment. So I'm working away, and I stopped work straight away and literally wrote down the idea that I had really, really quickly before I forgot it, and wrote down around 12 other creatures that I thought, oh, that's a great creature. Oh my gosh, that in illustration would be amazing. And it developed from there, and I wrote the story around these 12 that I found, and then narrowed it down to the ones, I think it was about six now, in the Hullabazoodle itself, six or seven different creatures. So it's literally all around you. It's whatever just you hear or you see, and I have to write it down. And the Hullabazoodle was created straight away. And it started out as the Hullabazoo, which it was a great word. And I loved the word that is a hullabaloo. It comes from a hullabaloo, which is a fuss about nothing, a commotion, a crowd. And I changed it to zoo because there was a zoo. And then I thought, actually, no, because he's actually drawing these. So we need to incorporate that. And that's where Doodle came in. So then it just came to Hullabazoodle.
Yeah,
it just went from there, from a hullabaloo to a hullabazoo to a hullabazoodle. So, yeah, and that's how that was born. And the characters are just phenomenal. Really, really good.
Absolutely.
I can't wait to share them. Really can't.
We're just going to another ad break, and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good. Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So, if you had one Christmas wish, what would it be?
Oh, my gosh. Presently, now, if you'd have asked me this 3 months ago, it would have been an entirely different question.
Yes, it's an entirely different answer.
Yes, it would. 3 months ago, I would have given you a completely different answer to what I'm going to give you now. But one Christmas wish for me now would be that my mum was well. My mum got diagnosed, or we are to find out on Friday for sure. My mum has been diagnosed with cancer, ovarian cancer. I know. And she's been incredibly poorly. We found out by chance. She was complaining of, just feeling very underwell, very, very poorly. We got her into hospital. We had to kidnap her because you know what the elderly are like. I don't want no fuss. I don't want no drama. Just give me some pills and I'll be fine. And we knew it was a little bit more serious than that. And I actually kidnapped her, shall I say, but not in the sense of wickedly. We did get her to A&E, which transpired then that she was very ill, very, very ill. We are there on Friday the 20th to just get the final results. We've had lots and lots of tests done. And we have been kind of 95% confirmed that she does have ovarian cancer. And we're just going to see how far it is, how bad it is. So fingers crossed, we are forever hopeful. And my mum is the most wonderful, wonderful woman ever on the planet. She's been my cheerleader forever. She helped me with my books, sits there packing all of the magic into the books. She's beautiful, beautiful person. She hasn't done of late because she's been very, very poorly. And I just wish, and I would spend my Christmas wish on that my mum had full health.
Of course.
This Christmas, most certainly would.
Absolutely. So I was going to ask you your plans for Christmas and the new year, and it sounds like you're going to be spending more time with mum.
Definitely. Most definitely. Mum will come to me as soon as possible, as soon as we can get her here. She's coming to me right up until and beyond the new year. And it will just be completely and utterly about mum this Christmas. Mm. Mum and baby Jude. Little Jude, you know, they're our two babies this year, we're going to say, but it will all be about them. And everybody's coming to me for Christmas breakfast. And then mum will probably just need a little bit of calm. So they will all go their respective ways to other families, you know, their in-laws, and have Christmas dinner with the in-laws. And it will be Christmas dinner just for me and my mom. So me and mama, we will enjoy for the first year, actually, Christmas, just the two of us. But that means it's all attention on my mama for me. And she gets to do what she wants. And I will enjoy the soaps. I swear I will enjoy
the soaps.
Of course,
yeah, all the TV stuff.
I will smile, yes. I will smile. And
what do you like watching? What is it that you like watching the most around the Christmas time?
Well, I don't watch the soaps. So my mum is a soap, avid soap. She's been an avid soap watcher her entire life. And I was, up until about 10 years ago. And then life got really, really busy and I've just gotten out of them. But I do watch them when I've got my mama here, bless her. And I will watch the Christmas ones because I don't think I've ever missed a Christmas one because I've always watched the Christmas ones. But I spend half the time going, who's that? Who's she? Where's Den? Where's Ange? And she's just like, oh my gosh, you are so behind. So we will watch them all. But for me, I love all the classic movies. The classic movies at Christmas, you cannot beat them, you know. Wonderful Life, definitely. Wizard of Oz has to be. Mary Poppins. Yeah. Oh my God.
All the classics,
which my mum loves as well. So we will enjoy the soaps with her, but we will also have gorgeousness of Miracle on 34th Street, the original. Scrooge, I see. I watch Scrooge at least five times. Five times over Scrooge, Christmas, Scrooge. I watch Scrooge. Yes, absolutely. So that will be watched. Even the Bill Murray one. I do like Scrooge.
Yeah, it's brilliant. When you said Scrooge, I actually thought of that one, to be honest
with
you.
Really?
I've always watched the classics. I've always, since whenever I remember as a baby child, whatever it was. But the one Bill Murray's brilliant, yeah.
Oh, it really is. You've got to love a bit of Bill Murray Scrooged. But yes, Albert Finney, definitely Albert Finney. We love Albert Finney. But Scrooged, I just love Bill Murray. So there we go. Definitely, definitely that one's on the cards.
Oh, and all the food as well.
Oh, don't even talk to me about food. I still shop like I've got six in the house. There's only two of us. So we're going to be rolling down the hill, literally rolling down the hill. But we've got Mum a wheelchair now, so at least we can get her out. So I will definitely be going for a Boxing Day walk because I live in the countryside. So we're going to wrap Mama up, put her a little Russian hat on her, cover her with a blanket, and we will go for a walk around the village and on Boxing Day and just try and shed a pound, but then come back and eat three mince pies. So works both ways, really. We're easy. Yeah.
Got to have a mince pie as well.
Definitely. It? Yeah, well, I've got 20 mince pies coming from Scotland that I've had made. Oh, lovely. My days.
Oh, gosh,
yes,
that's gonna be nice.
I know. She makes the most wonderful mince pies and a Christmas cake. So they're coming down from Scotland in the post. They should be here soon, actually. So I'll have to sample one before Christmas, of course. So,
Of course. That sounds brilliant. And a Christmas log, they're nice to eat, aren't they? The Christmas log.
Christmas, I haven't had a Christmas log in years. Absolutely years, sadly, because we kind of went on to Stollen. And then I don't know if I'm going to pronounce it right. And sorry, Italians, if I'm not. But the cake that looks like a big muffin? It's not pancetta because that's that's bacon, isn't it? Yeah. Or is it a panna cotta? Something like that. I don't know what it's called. Somebody listening to this now will be screaming, going, it's so-and-so. But it looks like a giant muffin. And it's like a it's beautiful.
If anyone was to touch base with you, about what you're doing or just in books, where can people find you? Like maybe on social media or websites or anything like that?
Yeah, so websites, it's perfectreasonspublications.co.uk. So if you go onto that website, you'll see me on there with all of the school's visits and some great photographs, which I'm going to update with even more this week. So perfectreasonspublications.co.uk. My books are also Waterstones and Amazon. So you can find them all on there. And if you just put in Kirsty Louise Garbutt, they will all pop up. And I am also on all of the social media landing pages, shall we call, Facebook, Instagram. And that is just my name, Kirsty Louise Garbutt. And there is a page on Facebook as well for Perfect Reasons Publications. But if you find me, you'll find everything, really, because it's all on the front pages. But yeah, hit everyone with my name. My name will come up and there we are.
Brilliant. Thanks for your time today. Much appreciate it.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you to our listeners. You can find me on Instagram at GabbyJ417. Until next time.